Ukraine and Russia gear up as fighting shifts to Ukraine's east. We'll get the latest from Kyiv.
Russia's going to be much closer to its supplies, to its own border. So Ukraine will be less able to conduct the sort of guerrilla warfare that has so far been really successful for them.
Plus, economists forecast an increased risk of a U.S. recession. And Elon Musk walks back his plans to join Twitter's board. It's Monday, April 11th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukrainian and Russian reinforcements continue to pour into eastern Ukraine in preparation for the next phase of the war as refugees flee a looming Russian assault. Fresh Russian tank and artillery units, as well as forces withdrawn from areas around the Ukrainian capital Kyiv, began arriving in recent days ahead of the expected offensive. Ukraine also started moving combat units toward the Donbas area in the east. Ukrainian authorities over the weekend urged all civilians in Ukrainian-controlled areas of the Donbas, as well as two districts of the Kharkiv region, to use all available means to leave immediately. We'll have more on what the likely next phase of the war in Ukraine could look like later in the show. Meanwhile, the World Bank now projects the war will shrink Ukraine's economy this year by more than 45%, in addition to inflicting enormous damage on the country's infrastructure. The bank also said the war is stoking concerns of a global economic slowdown, as it forecasts that countries including Belarus, the Kyrgyz Republic, Moldova, and Tajikistan will join Ukraine and Russia in falling into a recession. French President Emmanuel Macron and far-right leader Marine Le Pen are set to face each other in the second round of the French presidential elections on April 24th, after placing first and second, respectively, in a first round of voting yesterday. WSJ Paris bureau chief Stacey Miketree says that while the Macron-Le Pen face-off looks like a rematch of the 2017 presidential election, the landscape now is much different.
The far-right vote is bigger than ever. If you look at the voting from Sunday, you'll see that more than half of the votes went to parties that are either far-right or far-left. So the typical establishment party in France, they've almost evaporated at this point. And that means there's not a ton of moderate electorate for Macron to draw from in the second round.
Inflation in China has picked up 1.5% in March compared to a year earlier, the biggest annual jump in 3 months. The cost of some everyday goods, including food, rose sharply, while prices for services dropped as consumers stayed home. Separately, a more than 10% drop in passenger car sales in March spotlights a different set of challenges for the world's biggest car market, as car makers grapple with extended manufacturing halts because of COVID lockdowns and logistics delays. And Tesla CEO Elon Musk has reversed his decision to join the board of Twitter, according to an announcement yesterday by Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal. Agrawal didn't provide a reason for Musk's decision, but said Musk remains Twitter's biggest shareholder and, quote, "we will remain open to his input." The late Sunday announcement capped a whirlwind week in which Musk's 9.2% stake in Twitter was made public, along with plans for him to join the company's board. Musk didn't respond to a request for comment. Economic forecasters are raising the probability of a recession in the U.S. economy in the next 12 months. However, as Journal Markets reporter Caitlin McCabe writes, some investors still sense opportunity in the markets. And Caitlin joins us now with more. Hi, Caitlin. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing great. So what signs are economists seeing here as they warn about this heightened risk of a recession in the United States?
So economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal this month on average put the probability of a U.S. recession sometime in the next 12 months at 28%. And that's up from 18% just a few months ago in January and only 13% a year ago. And really, the reason behind this is something that we've all been hearing about and talking about a lot lately, and that's high inflation. 27% of respondents surveyed by the Wall Street Journal pointed to wage growth or a tight labor market as the biggest inflationary threat. And this really puts the Fed in this delicate balancing act. It has to raise rates enough to cool the economy and bring down inflation, but not so much that it actually tips the economy into a recession.
You mentioned concerns about wage growth and inflation weighing on how economists are forecasting the year to come. We are also 6+ weeks into the war in Ukraine. To what extent is that dragging down economists' projections?
So it's really interesting. If you think back 6 weeks ago, things were feeling pretty bleak in the markets. This was also coming at a time where we were still getting decades high inflation readings. The Fed was starting to tee up its first rate hike since 2018. And so stocks were falling at their worst this year. And then suddenly in early to mid-March, we saw this U-turn. And I think the first few days of it, investors were thinking this is just a brief move higher and we'll just continue this trajectory lower. And instead, I think a lot of investors were caught off guard when markets just kept climbing and climbing. And the S&P 500 is down only about 6% for this year now, about half of where it was at its worst.
Could you unpack that a little more? Why at least are some investors continuing to really sense opportunity here?
So there are actually myriad factors driving this right now. And one of the main reasons being is that stocks really don't do that poorly after the Fed starts hiking rates. So a Dow Jones market data analysis showed that after 1 year, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ composite were up 80% of the time 1 year after the Fed started hiking rates. And so I think a lot of investors right now are thinking, even if the economy tips into a recession, there's still quite a bit of time until that happens, and there's still quite a bit of time to leave money in the market. I think investors are still seeing some signs of positive news in the economy. The American balance sheet is still healthy. Consumers saved a lot during the pandemic, and so they think that will help, at least for the short term, insulate some of these inflation shocks that we've been seeing. And I think corporate earnings, which of course kick off this week, are expected to be pretty good as well. And so I think those two things are also making investors optimistic, at least in the short term.
That was Journal Markets reporter Caitlin McCabe. Caitlin, thanks for the update.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll hear from our reporter in Kyiv as Ukraine and Russia prepare for what's expected to be an intense fight in the eastern Donbas region. What could this next phase of the war look like, and how are both sides mobilizing? We'll have that story after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Ukraine and Russia have started amassing reinforcements in eastern Ukraine as their six-week war seems geared for a new phase. Russia is expected to launch an attack on parts of the eastern Donbas region that are not yet controlled by Moscow in what could soon become one of the war's biggest battles. WSJ national security reporter Brett Forrest joins us today from the streets of the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv. Brett, thank you for being with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Luke.
Brett, let's start by looking at what signs we have that a new Russian offensive in this war may be imminent. When could we expect to see this? And if we do, how might it manifest?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that one is imminent. Of course, we know that Russia has largely pulled back its forces, especially from in and around Kyiv and other areas. And you couple that with the understanding that Russia has not ended this war, and you realize that they're retooling, reloading, and redirecting. And I think we're also seeing some continuing softening up on civilian targets, as we saw with the attack on the Kramatorsk train station. So this new offensive is coming, and it should be coming fairly soon.
And what do we believe the strategic goal of this coming offensive to be. It seems as if in the beginning of the war, there were multiple axes of a fight being pursued at once. Perhaps a consolidation is occurring now. Toward what end?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. I think it's pretty clear that Russia's initial goals were overly ambitious, both in terms of scope and speed, timeline, etc. And now is the time when Russia is focusing on more achievable goals and more achievable timeframes. And I think it's really a two-part answer. One is the so-called land bridge that everyone's been talking about for a while, which would connect Russia proper across the northern lip of the Azov Sea to Crimea, which Russia has almost achieved, except for the holdout in Mariupol. That's one. And then the second one is consolidation and expansion of Russian territorial gains in the east, building off of the Donbass war that began in 2014. And it is likely that we'll see offensives northward toward Kharkiv, the city on the Russian border that has been besieged basically since the beginning of the war, and then possibly due westward to the critical city of Dnipro. And the Russian forces recently destroyed the airport there, and that, I think, remains a pivotal goal for them.
Is Ukraine prepared for this next phase of the war, which many expect to take on a rather conventional military form?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question, because this will be a different kind of war, or at least a different phase of this war. Ukraine has had a lot of success so far attacking extended Russian columns, and that's not how this next phase is going to likely be fought, because Russia is going to be much closer to its supplies. So Russia will be able to dig in, and Ukraine will be less able to conduct the sort of guerrilla warfare that has so far been really successful for them. So that's why you see Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky renewing calls for offensive weapons, because Ukraine really does now need different kinds of weapons to fight a very different kind of battle.
And do we have a sense whether those weapons are now being provided to Ukraine by the West?
I think the jury is still out. Of course, you saw the visit of Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, to Kiev yesterday, and he pledged to supply more armored vehicles and also anti-ship missiles, which I think would be important for Ukraine in the Azov Sea, also in the Black Sea. But you're still feeling a sense of reluctance from the United States and others to supply exactly the sorts of things that President Zelensky is asking for. On the other hand, with the terrible attack of civilians at the Kramatorsk train station, you pair that with the attack on the theater in Mariupol, and also with the terrible events in Bucha. And I think these are the sorts of incidents that begin to change people's minds and calculations and policies. And I think coming out of Washington, you're hearing increasing words from officials which seem to forecast just such a change. So I think it's important to keep an eye on that in the coming days.
Finally, Brett, have people been able to evacuate these areas in eastern Ukraine ahead of the expected fighting there?
It's a real mixed bag. Of course, you see a lot of people heeding the call to get out, but you see people having trouble getting out, such as in Kramatorsk and other areas where Russia continues to fail to honor agreements providing humanitarian convoys or green corridors, if you will. Atop that is the fact that a lot of people, I think, in Ukraine, just anecdotally from what I've seen, have trouble believing just how brutal Russia has been in this war. I know from talking to people who have relatives in the east who have tried time and again to get their relatives to move, to get on a train, to get in a car. A lot of their relatives say they just don't believe it. I'll mention Bucha again. I think that has been a turning point for some people in Ukraine who have been skeptical about just what Russian occupation looks like. And I've heard, just again, anecdotally, that more people are saying it's time to get out and get west and get to safety.
That was WSJ reporter Brett Forrest joining us today from Kyiv. Brett, thank you so much for the update, and stay safe.
Thank you.
And finally, compared to the apparel industry at large, the growing activewear industry hasn't made as many strides in selling their clothes in larger sizes, especially for those looking for technical gear like knee pads, hiking pants, or racing kits. WSJ reporter Katie Dayton says that while a glaring oversight in product offerings might have gone unaddressed before, brands are increasingly under pressure to design around those who actually use their products, or risk possible competition from startups.
Gen Z is such a big market that marketers and companies want to tap right now. And we see in so many aspects of life how much inclusion is important to them. I think anyone that is deliberately designing out people because of their body shape is not going to have many fans down the road.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.